This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. With the Senate voting to confirm Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as the new United States Secretary of Health and Human Services, we're going to dive deep into his prior statements, his Senate confirmation hearing, and the level of power his new position actually holds. RFK Jr. is the son of the late Senator Robert F. Kennedy and the nephew of the late President John F. Kennedy. If you asked a lot of Americans just 12 months ago if Kennedy would be in the position he's in now, I'd say a lot of them would be surprised. And if you go back years, it seems even more unlikely. Let's go back to the 1980s. That's when RFK had to resign as the assistant district attorney in New York. The reason why is because he failed the New York bar exam and was later charged with heroin possession before eventually getting clean and becoming an environmental activist. Last year at around this time, RFK was in the midst of a presidential campaign. He started off campaigning as a Democrat. That's the party his family is most associated with, but he eventually switched to being an independent candidate. Although his campaign was pretty successful as far as independent candidates go, it eventually became clear that he probably couldn't win the general election. It's around that time that he suspended the campaign and threw his support behind then-Republican nominee Donald Trump. That support came as a surprise to many, including Kennedy's family, but it also earned him a spot in Trump's cabinet. Now he's tasked with leading the nation's health agencies. And that's notable for a lot of reasons. One of the top reasons is that just a few years ago, Kennedy proposed that Black people should follow a different vaccine schedule. He claimed that their immune systems are stronger than that of white people. He also linked vaccines to unproven claims of autism, questioned if fluoride in water is harmful, and said that COVID was engineered to, quote, spare Jewish people. That's already a lot, but there is more. In a deposition taken during 2012, Kennedy said that a worm had eaten part of his brain and then died there in his brain. Now we'll fast forward back to this month, when Kennedy had his Senate confirmation hearings to take on the role of Secretary of Health and Human Services. Jason Schwartz, health policy and management professor at Yale, joined Odyssey in the days after to break down exactly what happened during those hearings.
Could you break that down for us?
The Department of Health and Human Services is a vast presence in our government, in our health system, one of the largest agencies in the federal government. It has its hands in just about every aspect of health and biomedical work in our country, from the kinds of agencies like the National Institutes of Health that lead biomedical research, the Food and Drug Administration, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that provide health insurance to literally over 100 million Americans. All of those agencies are under the leadership of the HHS secretary, which is why this nomination has generated so much attention, so much controversy. The scale and scope of the job and the role and its touch is really, really substantial.
How independent is the person that heads this agency?
It depends. It varies from administration to administration. Those various agencies, like the ones that I mentioned, are large and vast with their own leadership, their own cultures, their own missions. And the HHS secretary historically has had different levels of engagement in the particular work that happens within them. But as we look at this administration, we see there's clearly a strong guiding hand already in these first few weeks coming from the White House, coming from President Trump and his immediate appointees himself. And that is, I think, we'd be kidding ourselves not to imagine that that wouldn't extend down to the work of his designee, his secretary, in steering and shaping and, frankly, reshaping all of those agencies, the kinds of work they do, their own leadership, their own priorities to fit the values and priorities of the administration. So that's why, you know, this position, I think, is being seen as the really, really significant potential appointment that it is.
We've seen over the years that nominees have to do this dance with senators and congresspeople about what their intentions are, whether or not those intentions remain the same after they take office. We've been dipping into RFK Jr.'s hearing this morning as he tries to explain that he's, quote, not anti-vaccine. Is that consistent with what he's put out over the years?
Sure, and I've been watching a lot of the hearing myself here this morning, and I've seen this back and forth. You know, there's no doubt that for the better part of 25 years, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been one of the most vocal, committed critics and opponents of the safety and effectiveness of vaccines in our country. The record is incontrovertible in that context. So now, you know, we are seeing this dance, as you mentioned, of the nominee saying, well, you know, he's pro-vaccine safety, or he's trying to create more information or more evidence to give parents more choice, all of which I think are things that we would all agree with. But that does certainly paper over the decades of books and statements and lawsuits that I think have been raised in the hearing, noting that the actions of Mr. Kennedy and the organizations that he's led have been very much trying to undermine some of the core approaches to vaccines that our country has relied upon as a bedrock of its public health tools for generations.
Some of the public health experts are concerned about how Mr. Kennedy might handle the Vaccines for Children program, the $8 billion program that provides the vaccines for more than half of the nation's children. How could this change under him?
Yeah, the Vaccines for Children's program is a real success story. It takes the ability to pay for vaccines off the table as a potential barrier for America's children, that if a vaccine is recommended by our CDC experts, another group that Mr. Kennedy would have strong influence in shaping, but once a vaccine gets that recommendation, this program ensures that it is available at no cost, regardless of whether a child has insurance or not, or what kind of insurance they have. And it's been, over its 30-year history, accredited with remarkable successes in keeping vaccination rates high and preventing vaccine-preventable diseases. So under this new administration, it's entirely plausible to see changes in the schedule of recommended vaccines that come forth from CDC. And those changes in the recommended vaccine schedule would mean changes in how certain vaccines are covered or included in this program. And the consequences of that would mean that we'd be back in an era where children and families would have to pay for vaccines out of pocket. They might have to pay large co-pays or deductibles or shares of vaccine prices. And that, you know, would invariably mean that there would be children who wouldn't get vaccines. And we know what happens when vaccination rates decline. We see outbreaks of vaccine-preventable disease. And all of those things work back to the decisions that are made in these HHS agencies and the nominees and appointees that are tasked with stewarding the VFC program, as it's called, and the other vaccination programs in this period ahead.
Kennedy's had some unorthodox views on many things, like the vaccines, fluoride, and raw milk. But then he talks about things that I think resonate with a lot of people. like combating the nation's chronic diseases, cutting ultra-processed foods from the American diet. Are these ideas, and beyond these ideas, what other ideas of his are resonating with the American people and maybe with the administration?
Yes, you're right. Some of those issues have found maybe unexpected allies in terms of, as you mentioned, concerns about chronic diseases, food diets, food additives, ultra-processed foods. There are plenty of folks across the political spectrum, plenty of folks who I would suggest probably are not fans of the incoming administration generally, who have shared interest in the importance of those issues going forward. And I think the question that lots of folks in public health and healthcare and even in Washington have to confront is separating the message from the messenger, thinking about, are these sorts of priorities likely to be executed, likely to be realized, if Mr. Kennedy were to be confirmed, and how do they square with some of the other, far more controversial, frankly, far more objectionable public health positions he's had over the years. And you see this tension unfolding even in the hearings or even in some health commentators about what's likely to be done, what's likely to be possible in some of these big, challenging issues like chronic diseases, like our food supply, that are deep, complex issues with lots of industry interests, lots of complexity, and I think real questions about whether any political appointee, even one as powerful as a cabinet secretary, would be able to achieve the kind of transformations that are sometimes promised. I think that would be a really tall hill to climb.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
RFK Jr., who has no medical degree or training in healthcare or in science, wants to change how vaccines are tested and approved. He's called for more thorough testing, even though experts in the field have said that what he wants is unethical. To explain more about this, Amish Adalja, senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, joined Odyssey before Kennedy's confirmation.
So what type of testing is he proposing, and how does it differ from what we do now?
One of the things that you hear anti-vaccine advocates talk about is wanting new vaccines to undergo placebo-controlled trials. So that means if there's a new measles vaccine, for example, that you would test it by not giving one group any type of measles vaccine and then giving the new measles vaccine to the test. And it's unethical because we have a safe and effective measles vaccine, so you can't just not give one group a vaccine that we know would be helpful to them, even if there might be an improved version. So when you see them rail against newer polio vaccines, they want people to not have any vaccine and then be trialed against the other vaccine. And you can't do that when there's an existing safe and effective vaccine. You have to test it against what would be the standard vaccine. And they use that to kind of sow doubt into vaccines and say, oh, this vaccine was never tested against in a placebo-controlled trial. And they completely drop the context of the fact that you cannot expose people to something that's dangerous if there is a vaccine against it. And this is just more of his obfuscation and basically misleading the public in order to push his dark ages agenda of the anti-vaccine movement.
But are vaccines continuously checked and improved after their first approval?
Yes, they are. There's lots of post-market surveillance that goes on. The CDC, the FDA, the manufacturers, they all are collecting data on vaccines to understand if there's any side effects that are very rare that appear when, you know, tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people are vaccinated, and they are refined. And we are always trying to improve vaccines. We're improving flu vaccines, COVID vaccines. We've improved the shingles vaccine. So yes, vaccines are continuously being improved. It's not something that is static and happens once and then everything is done. That's also a misnomer. It's something that's always continuously undergoing improvement in order to make them better, make them more effective, make them more safe.
Confidence in vaccines has gone down since the pandemic, even though they're credited with saving thousands of lives. A survey from the Annenberg Public Policy Center found that confidence in vaccines approved for use in the U.S. fell to 71% in October 2023. Back in April 2021, confidence in the vaccines had been at 77%. Another study from the University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy found that misinformation about vaccines, specifically the COVID-19 vaccine, is still an issue today. In total, it found that 28% of survey respondents mistakenly believed that COVID-19 vaccines have caused thousands of deaths. But beyond the COVID shot, low vaccination rates for any major virus can have a serious impact on our population. Just one example of this is a measles outbreak in Texas that was sparked by low vaccination rates. To share more about how this all went down, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease expert at UCSF, joined Odyssey.
All right, measles. Who would have thought, right? Why do you think it's spreading so rapidly? I mean, they went from 28 cases, I think, in Texas to like 48 cases super quickly.
Well, there are two factors for it, Lisa. One is that the vaccination rate is particularly low in this community. About 82% of children entering kindergarten were vaccinated in this community, as opposed to the national benchmark of around 95%. And the second reason is that measles is one of the most infectious diseases we know. You can be in a room, leave the room with measles, and then somebody else can enter that room 2 hours later and get it.
Wow, it hangs in the air for that long.
Yes.
So why Texas? Is it specifically because the kids aren't getting vaccinated or some other kind of cultural thing that we're not getting?
I mean, there are two factors. The main reason, like you mentioned, is the very high unvaccinated rate in this community, mainly due to exemptions at the kindergarten level. And the second is that many of these kids were in the same community. They played together, they socialized together, and, it just spread like wildfire. It reminded me of a few years ago when in California we had an exposure to Disneyland, and then people went back to their communities, and it really exposed where vaccination wasn't happening.
So the big question is this: could RFK Jr. irrevocably damage or improve American health in his new role as the head of the Department of Health and Human Services? HHS and its agencies oversee drug approvals, food safety, and disease surveillance, in addition to the massive healthcare budgets of Medicare and Medicaid. Kennedy has promised to upend federal priorities and wrote on X that the, quote, FDA's war on public health is about to end. He suggested that half of the National Institute of Health's budget should be directed to preventative, alternative, and holistic approaches to health. That's left people wondering what's going to happen to some of the other approaches to health that the country has funded in the past. But can Kennedy do that? Well, Lawrence Gostin, a professor at Georgetown Law School in Washington, D.C., told MedPage for a report that Kennedy now has extensive power, but that it isn't unlimited. Gostin noted that at the NIH in particular, Congress funds certain centers and programs. On the other hand, the HHS secretary does make the final decision on all FDA approvals, according to Gostin. Kennedy has promised to eradicate the American food supply of pesticides and genetically modified crops, which, on the face of it, sounds to most of us like a great idea. However, these are key for American farmers and their multi-billion dollar industry, so many observers believe his plans could hit economic roadblocks from his friends within the GOP. And then there are intangibles, things that happen along the way that nobody could anticipate. Case in point, when Kennedy was an independent candidate battling Trump for the presidential job, he posted on X that he could eat five more of those brain worms we mentioned before and still beat both Trump and former President Joe Biden in a debate. Yeah, he said he felt confident even with a six-worm handicap. Later, Kennedy called Trump the greatest debater in modern American history. That just goes to show that things change, and all we can do at this point is wait and see. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strauser, and by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.